part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part.
Fanboy.com.
Should we just start the interview, start the conversation?
Sure.
Cool. All right. Well, let's just start off by saying that this is the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. My name is Christian Horn. I have a very special guest on the line. His name is Samuel Vera. Do you prefer Sam or Samuel or?
Either one. It's fine.
Okay, cool. I just, you know, want you to be comfortable and know what to call you as we chat. But you are on the podcast because I like to start off, you know, when somebody has a Kickstarter, by letting everybody know that right off the bat. You have a Kickstarter for a project going right now called There's an Alien in My Toilet, correct?
Correct, yes.
Which is a hysterical name for a project, I must say.
Yes, it is.
I must say. So, yeah, currently right now the Kickstarter is running. When does the Kickstarter end?
March 8th.
March 8th. Okay, so there's plenty of time. I'm going to be putting this up this week. So that is the week of President's Day. So luckily we'll have it right up. And anyone who listens to this interview will have plenty of time to go check your project out. How about letting people know what There's an Alien in My Toilet is about? I mean, it sounds pretty self-descriptive, but, you know, there's got to be more to it than just...
Yes, there's a lot more to it. The title is the punchline, and
sure,
you don't connect the dots till the 10th issue, which is, it's a 10-issue miniseries.
Oh, wow. And is this just issue one or the whole thing?
This is issue one, yes.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yes.
And from reading the Kickstarter description this morning, it seems like it's an all-ages book, like a humor kind of story,
yes,
right?
It's all-ages book, so don't be afraid by the title. although his name is Duty, and he's from the planet Uranus.
Oh, boy.
you got to add that extra punch to the humor. But yeah, it's an all-ages sci-fi comedy series, yeah. Reminiscent of like Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner. It's slapstick humor. And it's about this egocentric, thinks he knows it all alien from the planet Uranus who's sent on a mission to Earth to determine if we're a threat to his homeworld. And he believes he's the only one capable of handling this sensitive mission. What he doesn't really know is that General Goti, the general of Uranus's army, sent him off on this fool's errand to get him away from him because Duty can become a little overbearing. And so the general has to babysit because Duty's father's the emperor of Uranus. So Duty, you know, in his haste and arrogance, you know, heads off to Earth and forgets to refuel along the way. So he crash lands on Earth.
Oh, and so he can't get back.
Yeah. So he refuses to admit that he made this calculated error. And he, you know, chalks it up to it was part of his plan to, sneak into Earth in the first place. And now he must survive Earth's simple creatures, whether it's a woodpecker or a squirrel or a bear. And he eventually gets into a home. And in this home, there's a chihuahua named Herman who thinks that Duty is a talking jalapeno. And it takes off from there.
Oh, wow. That's great. Is he able to communicate with the chihuahua or is it just like...
Yes, there's a rivalry that goes on because the chihuahua knows that there's this intruder in the home. The father's son, Bobby, thinks that he's seeing things and he's trying to convince his dad that he saw something in the house. And the dad thinks he's going nuts and he becomes the butt of jokes from his work buddies. And so the dad ends up hiring, an organization called No Boo For You. Catching ghosts is what we do. And they're the Ghostbusters. He thinks the house is haunted. And then that happens. And then he also hires another organization, which is called WANA, We Are Not Alone Incorporated. And, they're coming looking for extraterrestrials. And there's an agent called Doe, Agent Doe. He's part of a secret government organization tracking where this UFO crash landed and hunting down and trying to trace the steps. So there's a lot of moving parts. And the whole goal is now for Duty to evade and try to get back home.
Oh, gotcha. So, I mean, it's very much like when I was looking at the Kickstarter description, one of the sort of references that you called out was like ALF, right?
Yes.
Like, and so it seems a little bit like that, but with a bit more sort of like hijinks, I would say, because ALF was kind of limited in that he was a puppet, right? Like kind of like a Muppet sort of character, right?
Yes. And Duty, the difference between, and there's a major difference because Duty tends to fall unconscious, whether it's because he tripped over a rock or because a woodpecker pecked him off of a tree. And so what happens is he ends up in this dream state. In his dream state, he creates these larger-than-life characters. So he takes on the persona of maybe a samurai or a military officer, and his opponent, whether it's the chihuahua or whether it's an ant, becomes the nemesis, right? And so he defeats his nemesis in his dream state, and he does in combat. But in reality, he keeps getting, failing.
gotcha. And so it sounds like this was, you know, and I'm just going off the Kickstarter because that's kind of all I really had to work with when, you know, researching this book. It sounds like this is something you did a while ago, right? Like 10 years ago or... Was this part of another book, like this character Duty, or was it its own book? And then you kind of stepped away for it for a little while. Like how did that work?
So what happened was back in 2005, I had my own imprint, Crazy Comics. And at that time I was producing two comic books, Cosmic Wars. Three, Cosmic Wars, Rush 5377 and Forbidden. And Rush 5377 was, created by my, co-host and partner, George Medina. And so we were producing that, and an editor from a newspaper approached us and said, hey, if you guys have a sci-fi comedy comic strip, you know, we'd be willing to publish it.
Oh, cool.
So, and that was the beginning of it. I was driving through the Lincoln Tunnel in New Jersey. And
home base. That's my home base too. Yeah.
So Duty just appeared in my brain and he said, hi, I'm Duty from Uranus. And that's where it started. And so I went to IHOP and met my buddies at IHOP, and I started drawing on the table napkin. He doesn't look anything like the initial illustration, but and that's how Duty came to be. And then I realized I didn't want it to just be a comic strip. I wanted it to be a full-fledged book. So I decided to produce it myself. And to a lot of fanfare, Duty got on national TV, local TV, magazines, newspapers, and we were represented by Circle of Confusion, who's a Hollywood management company that represents Robert Kirkman, Dead, the Wachowski brothers. And we were very, very close to an animation deal with Warner Brothers. And then it was around first quarter of the new year at that time. And everybody knows that in business, that's the time where reviews happen.
Yeah.
They change departments, you know, leadership changes, and that's what happened. So they changed the acquisitions team and they put in a new team, and anything that was on the table ended up in the trash, and they were starting fresh and going a new direction. And that was one of the reasons why I left comics. And
Really?
Yeah. So I left comics for 10 years. It was a series of things that happened in that year that I was like, you know what? You know, I need a break. I was funding everything myself. So I was working full time and funding it. And so it was really, really eating away at the home expense. And so, I had to walk away from it I didn't even give a reason why, I just disappeared. And then I decided in 2019 to come back. This year I decided to reintroduce Duty with a remastered version of what I produced back then. And it's, you know, recolored, relettered, remastered, brand new covers, and reintroduce it to a world that he didn't really get to see his full potential in my eyes, and I get to finish what I started.
Sure. So let me go back a little bit. You got an offer for like a newspaper strip, right? And when you go with them, hey, my character's Duty and the planet Uranus, like were they, did it even get to that point? Were they just like, hey, wait a minute, I don't know if we could do this in a newspaper, you know what I mean?
No, what happened was once I created the character and I started fleshing out the look and the premise, I said to myself, I'm not taking it to anybody. I'm going to produce it myself. And I put all my chips on the table. I got a booth at Licensing Expo. That's how I got the management company, because there was so much interest and they were talking in languages that for us, we didn't understand. I was like, you know what? We need people who understand how to navigate in this space.
Yeah.
And so Circle of Confusion approached us and said, hey, look, you know, we don't receive a fee until we secure a deal.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's even better. The other guys were saying, we want 90%. Well, you know, we want to own it and we'll give you 2%. You know, so it was like, what?
Yeah.
So I was like, I smell shark. So we went a different direction and I decided that's what happened. I just put everything, put everything on black and, rolled the dice. And,
wow. Wow. That takes a lot of guts, especially, I mean, as someone who knows like the cost of creating comic books or making your own thing and actually having a family as well. I mean, I know how much of a gamble like that sort of thing can be. And as you just mentioned, I mean, it starts to eat. I mean, it's not cheap to make comic books. I mean, it's not as expensive as like, say, making, well, I mean, I don't know these days, like a feature film or something, but, right. You know, the costs add up, especially now with all the paper crisis and all that, all the crazy printing stuff. It must have been quite an education for you.
It was, you know, and that was one of the things, the biggest takeaway. And I feel like I've gotten smarter with that break, because I didn't have a mentor, no one to guide. You know, I was trying to launch my own independent, publishing company for comics. Had my own imprint, had the trademarks and everything, and I was learning as I went, and I was making the mistakes. I was doing things that most people weren't doing. You know, everything I did was grassroots. So I would spend my weekends just packing press kits, and they were about a pound each. I was just putting in big envelopes, and I would identify who is the literary editor at the New York Times. I would send them a package, you know, the New York Post,
sure,
whatever, you know, radio stations. I mean, I was sending, I was killing my pockets, but that's how I got on to the news. That's how I got on Fox and on NBC. And it was because I took a gamble. And, and then I would self-distribute in New York and New Jersey to the comic book stores, my books, and until I did the graphic novel, which was nationally distributed. But at that time, I was at every comic book shop, hitting the pavement, negotiating with comic book comic cons for free tables. I was very lucky then. With the fact that people saw my passion and my project, and they said, you know what, we're gonna give this kid a chance, so that's how I navigated in that space. But it was a lot of work. I worked full time with a job paying the bills, for the family. But then when I'd come home, I'm up till 2 a.m, 7 days a week working on this stuff, and I just burned both sides of the candle.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty amazing, because I know that. Years ago, I did help a friend get a comic book started called Baby Badass through Action Lab, and that's going through its own things like right now with just Google Action Lab and you can find out like what's happening with that. But I also have my own like little hobby book that I do on the side, called The Periwinkle Puss and stuff like that. But it's funny because when I became a dad, 15 years ago, it's like I had to make that choice. Am I going to be that guy who's up till 2 a.m? And, if I am that guy, am I going to be able to be present for my family, like my baby and stuff like that? Like I could do it, but I would be grouchy and grumpy and like really a pain in the ass to my wife and tired all the time and not productive at work. Like I made that calculation and I had to kind of like step away and be like, no. So can you talk to me about that choice that you made? Because it's a very like big choice to do that, right?
Yeah, it was.
Did it affect your work life and stuff like that?
No, what it did was because I felt so guilty, I stopped communicating. I stopped answering email. I would receive hundreds of, at that time we were building a fan following for Duty, for The Zane in My Toilet.
Sure.
And I just stopped responding to emails. I just shut everything down.
Oh, really?
I even had a podcast. I shut everything down and I just disappeared.
Oh, wow.
And And so it was for me, and it's one of those things that I've been working on.
So wait, is that after the Warner Brothers deal fell through or before?
It was after.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah,
okay,
gotcha. It was after. San Diego Comic-Con 2008, I believe, or 9 was my last show.
Uh-huh.
That was, and I walked away from comics.
Okay.
And what I did was I just focused and engulfed myself in my work that paid the bills, and I just rose up in the ranks in corporate – in the corporate retail space. And that's all I did. And then once, then after years and, you know, we got our home, everything stabilized, we were fine financially, everything was good. I always had my office, with all of my art and my draft table, but it was just a museum. And so I looked at my wife, I was like, look, I said, you know, tomorrow's not promised to any of us. And I don't want to have that on my conscience that I could have seen this happen and I never didn't. And I gave up. Yeah. I don't want to give up because I was responsible in the corporate space for hundreds of people. And I'm always preaching to them about believing their passion and commitment and drive.
Yeah.
And yet I gave up.
Yeah.
And I walked away. So it was hard for me to look myself in the eye. So She gave me that Adrian speech that she gave to Rocky, and she says, you know, go for it. And I was like, I'm back in the ring, and I made an announcement on social media, and I haven't been present on social media. And Mark Torres from It Came From the Radio, a radio show in Long Island, said, would you like to come over here and make a formal announcement on my show? I was like, sure. And so I went over there. Then I did the Kids Comic Con. Because it's my target audience is all ages and family. And that was my worry back in, and then COVID struck.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, nice timing, Sam.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it did, but what COVID did for me was it really allowed me to hone in on what my true purpose is going to be with coming back in my brand. So it really let me focus on building an audience again, because I was practically non-existent on social media. So I had to rebuild all that stuff and figure out how the game has changed and how the technology has changed and the market has changed, everything. So much has changed. And so it's just getting acquainted, meeting up with old friends from the industry, and you know, just getting myself back to feeling like I was part of it. Because when I first came back, I felt like an outsider.
Uh-huh. When you first came back. But when you were like, what, 2005 to 2008, I'm assuming this is like the span of years. I guess that was sort of like my question, you know, earlier. I mean, how hard was it for you to balance all that stuff with, you know, I mean, you're drawing the book too, correct?
Yeah.
So you're drawing, you're writing, you're managing the printing, the publishing, the PR, like you're doing all of that yourself.
Yeah.
How did you stay married? Because that was the calculation that I made, where I was like, this is not going to work. Like, how did that work for you?
My wife worked long hours. So, and we made time, like we picked a specific day in the week that it was uninterrupted, just our time.
Gotcha.
So it was like whatever it was that day of the week was it. But and she knew that everything. And then once that out time is done and she went to bed, I went into my office.
Yeah.
You know, so I was sleeping 3 hours a day during that time.
Samuel. No.
Yes. Yes. I mean, we have stories. I mean, I remember like New York Comic Con, all the guys are over and we're working till 4 a.m. and we have to be there to set up at 8 a.m. And, you know, we slept 2 hours. We went straight to, you know, that's how it was. It felt like, we were, you know, musicians on the road, and we were doing 18 shows a year throughout the U.S. And that was even, that was grinding. We were in Chicago. We were in Pittsburgh. We were in San Diego. We were in Philly, in Washington. I mean, we were everywhere.
Yeah.
And so that took a toll. My wife, I don't know how, I mean, we're still married. So
congratulations.
I'm surprised. That's good news. She could have kicked me to the curb 1,000 times.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's amazing. And that's a great statement towards your relationship, because I mean, I'm always just fascinated, like with the con lifestyle and stuff. Like I'd like to travel, but like just traveling to different places, going to cons again and again and again, and sitting at that table all day, you know, every day. To me, you know, I'm trying to make that calculation now sometimes, especially like as we're sort of like coming out of this COVID thing, like, is that something that I like, you know what I mean? And, right. But it sounds like that's something that you enjoyed. Like it was something that you enjoyed doing. I mean, I like mixing with the people, like meeting new people, but you know, just doing the setup and going to the, you know, for me, that's not always the greatest way to spend my time, it feels.
Yes. So for me, that's the, for me, that is probably the best, like, I don't like I'm very calculating now with the type of events I'm going to go to and making sure that that audience, my project would appeal to a percentage of that audience. Because I think when I was younger, when I was doing this, you know, we made a lot of mistakes. Like we would overprint and we would have luggages and there's just tons of luggage that we would travel with. And we wouldn't even sell 25% of that. And so now it's like, I understand I do a calculation about, all right, what's the potential size? What percentage is drawn for the celebrity? What percentage is for this? You know, so if I can get this percentage, what does that equate to, you know, as far as unit sales or whatever? And it helps me not overpack. But I love it because I love taking photos with people, meeting new people, watching their reaction when they pick up the book, and just chatting with them. And then what happens is, and hopefully building a relationship through social media and then seeing them again at a next event or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's the highlight for me.
Yeah.
That's
no,
like, agreed. That's the end game for me. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I've done conventions where it was just a bad, like I did a Star Wars convention. I had no business being there. And, you know, I was like sitting at a table at the prom waiting for somebody to ask me to dance because they just kept walking by.
Yeah. No, you know, I've been to some smaller conventions where it's kind of like, okay, like crickets, but yeah, no, the meeting the people and interacting with the crowd and people being like, oh, this is cool. Or, oh, I really, yeah. Like that stuff is like really great. It's just the grind of like travel. Like I'm so impressed by people who can do it, like go to New York Con and go to cons in Philadelphia and then the West Coast and all that stuff. Like that sort of thing is just like, wow. I mean, I find it impressive. Like you said, it's like a band going on the road.
Yeah. Right? We've had some stories where we thought we were saving money on a hotel, but next year, you know, it's like 2 miles away from the nearest train station to get to the event. And we're walking across a highway with luggage.
Yes. No, I've been through that. I've been through that where it's like, I'm lugging my little, my daughter's, little red wagon, like collapsible red wagon with all of my stuff, like down to the convention. It's just like, oh God, like, horrible. What am I doing? It's very much sometimes like Danny Glover from Lethal Weapon. Like I'm getting too old for this shit.
Yes.
Which is great that like things like Kickstarter exist now. Right. I mean, that wouldn't have been around. Was that around like in 2005? I mean,
No, I think it was when I first, was introduced to Kickstarter. I think it was around 2008. But I didn't understand it, how to work it.
Yeah.
I didn't understand it. It's like, you know, what people are going to think, you know, I was like, what are people going to think, you know, that I'm just trying to, I just want their money. I didn't understand it.
And yeah. So yeah. Yeah.
When I came back into comics in 2019, a friend of mine, JD Calderon, who produces a book called The Oswald Chronicles. He is a crowdfunding connoisseur. I mean, this guy's done it, successfully dozens of times. So he educated me on what to do before, during, and after a campaign. And he's like, you know, you should go, because before that, everything I was, you know, shelling out of my own pocket.
Yeah.
And so the good thing about me doing a crowdfunding is that all the work is done.
Yeah.
Now it's just about getting it out there to as many people's hands as possible.
Sure.
And what crowdfunding has also allowed is for me to be in touch with retailers, because I've had retailers reach out to me asking me, I like, you know, on Instagram, hey, do you have a retails bundle for your campaign? I really dig what you're doing with this. That I didn't have that opportunity before. I would have to do cold calls or cold walk-ins.
Yeah.
And now they're out there looking for new things. And that's pretty amazing to me, because it helps take a burden of off your shoulders when you're like, all right, after crowdfunding, then what?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, you're killing two birds with one stone.
That's great to know that there's, I mean, retailers out there, because I know that there's definitely some shops that I came across a couple of years ago, like in the LA area, where they were like, yeah, we just don't, like have stuff. I mean, there's definitely shops that do and like will do stuff on consignment and things like that. But there were definitely people that were just like, yeah, I don't know. Like, you know, Superman, Batman, if it doesn't come through Diamond, like that's it. Like, you know, and
yeah.
And it was just kind of like heartbreaking to me because I was like, but you guys are like the gatekeepers. Like you're the ones that are trying to get like you're the portal and you're supposed to love all comics, not just like, you know, the big two or the big two in Image or the big two in Image and Dark Horse. Right. So, I mean, right. It's great to hear. I mean, I see on Kickstarter that people do retailer bundles, but to me, it's great to know that there's retailers like reaching out to creators like you who are like, hey man, I saw your thing. I want it in my shop.
Yeah. Cause I moved to Texas 6 months ago and I went to seven comic shops in Texas and all of them said no.
Wow.
And they barely had an independent presence in their locations either. And one shop owner said to me, why would I want to drive traffic away from my store to you? And I was like, wow. I said, well, you know, your consumer might ask if you're going to carry this. I have a retail bundle. Yeah. And I was, you know, doing my pitch and he's like, And so I was like, wow, I didn't have that problem in New York and New Jersey. Every store I went to in New York and New Jersey, whether they did it and they paid me up front or they did it in consignment, they all put the books on and they would also put my bag stuffers on the counter to promote the books. Yeah. Out here, I just kept running into a wall.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's terrible. Yeah. Yeah. It's so weird how kind of like an industry is just wholly based on like the big corporate comics. I mean, that's also some of the things that I've heard from comic retailers is like, if Marvel and DC go, like that's it for the business. You know what I mean? And meanwhile, there's like hundreds of like indie things out there that people are clamoring to like try and get into some sort of shop. And there's, you know, I'm not saying that there isn't an interest, but the amount of people that are willing to take a chance or a shot on that is kind of like minimal, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because they want you to do the legwork. Yeah, they want you to do the legwork first. So that's the challenge for the indie world. Crowdfunding has been a blessing for the unsung hero.
Yeah.
The bigger boys are taking over that space like they do comic cons, right? So
yeah.
You know, comic book conventions were great for the little guy to get their word, you know, and then next year, you know, Hollywood took over.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's the same thing that's happening to crowdfunding, and so it's a blessing and a curse at the same time. But you still carry the burden of having to go out there and promote, which is why I'm doing about 28 of these shows. I'm doing about two a day to try to get the word out because the burden is on you.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't end when you illustrate the last page and you put the last letter on it. You send it to print. That's just the beginning.
Yeah.
Now you got to go out there and let the world know, who doesn't even know you exist. Hey, look, I have something here that you might be interested in.
Yeah. 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 No, I mean, it's a lot of heavy lifting for sure. And that's the sort of thing, like how, I mean, you're drawing it. Are you're coloring it, your letter, you're doing everything by yourself?
No. I'm not. I hired a colorist named Barbara Sorogi from Brazil.
Okay.
She actually colored my last book called Forbidden, is a fantasy series.
Okay.
So she colored this, and George Medina, who has his own book called Wonder Duck, he did the lettering for me. But all of the art is by me, the story is by me, but the lettering and coloring was outsourced.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay, cool. Well, that's good that you were able to do that. I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah, because I'm a novice colorist, and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna get a pro who knows what they're doing. They specialize in this because, you know, it's just like, for instance, like traditional comic book illustration, like you would see with like, you know, the Avengers. While I can illustrate that, it's not my strength. I don't like it. I prefer cartoony, you know, Garfield, Peanut, Schultz, you know, animated style of cartoon, Disney style illustration.
Yeah.
That's where I have the most fun. Anything outside of that is like work for me.
Yeah. No, I'm a little bit the same way in that I feel like I can work faster in that cartoon style, but I can definitely do like, you know, like the Avengers, whatever, you know, I can draw that sort of thing if I put my mind to it, but in the time that I have available to myself, you know, when working on my own sort of thing, I definitely tend to drift towards that sort of for lack of a better term, cartoony style, you know,
yes.
not to minimize that sort of art, because I think that there's a lot of creators out there who think like, oh, once you say cartooning, you know, that doesn't mean that it's good. And it's like, no, it's just different. And
which is why I tend to say, like, you know, I'll give like brand names like Garfield or Calvin and Hobbes, or I said that style of art is what I prefer to illustrate. And so when people hear those names, oh, that's pretty cool. If you say cartoony, then you get that look like, hmm.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely. No, so wait, let me go back a little bit and ask you, how did you get into comics? Because, I mean, it seems like from in the beginning of this conversation, you were like, I wanted to make a comic, and I just made a comic, and I went out and made a comic. Like, you know, like, were you into comics before that? Or, like, I mean, have you been drawing all your life? Like, how did you discover comics and just, like, comic art?
Comics, I discovered comics when I was a kid because my mom used to read the Archie Comics Digest.
Okay.
And that's how I first saw a comic book.
Okay.
And then the reason why I started illustrating, because my brother, he had a sketchbook and he had the illustration that he did of three monkeys in a barrel. Uh-huh. And I was like, wow, that's so cool. I want to do that. And that's when I started drawing. But now I didn't realize you can do it for a living. When I was a kid, I didn't associate what I was getting and seeing with a creator behind it.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I saw, because I was a big fan of Fraggle Rock and the Dark Crystal and the Neverending Story, all these stuff. And I saw a TV series called Too Close for Comfort. And the father.
Oh, that's right. That's
was
right.
A comic illustrator.
Wait, you and I have to be around the same age if you're talking about Too Close for Comfort.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're in Jersey and New York and all that. Yeah. Yeah. That was like, yeah. Okay. Go on.
Yeah. So he was drawing Cosmic Cow. And I was
Cosmic.
And that's how he made his living. And I'm like, I think, Mom, you could make a living doing this.
Yeah.
And she said, yes. And from that point on, I said, that's it. That's what I want to do. I want to create my own comics. And then it was my mom's boyfriend, ended that blind ambition. He told me that, I won't ever amount to a real artist because all I do is copy what I see.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I was about 12 years old. I had a clubhouse underneath the house that I staged. And I went in there, pouted for a little bit. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to prove him wrong. And I just started forcing my imagination to go into overdrive. And I remember there was a period of time where I would close my eyes and I would see all these amazing characters and I would just start drawing. Yeah. And it just started, it was almost as if like the universe said, you know what? We got you. And they just started filling my mind with stuff. And that's what happened. And then when I was in music, we had a production company called Crazy Skills Production. And at that time, I remember sitting down with my manager and my producer, and I said, I want to create a media group called Crazy Media Group, which I currently own the LLC for. And I said, and then under that, I want divisions, like Crazy Skills Productions, Crazy Comics, Catch the Crate. So I had all this stuff. And so when the music didn't pan out, I decided to go and follow my passion and start my own comic book imprint. And with no prototype, no handbook, no guidebook on how to do it, I just went out there and just started. I said, let me go and create my logo and get it trademarked. And that's how I started. And then I met some buddies and I said, this is what I want to do. And we started writing the scripts for the comic books. I had my first outing was a book called Tales of an Assassin that we got to illustration, but actually never follow through with it because then everybody went their separate ways. And then I took some continuing education courses at the School of Visual Arts, and that's how I met my buddy George Medina. And we were in a life drawing class, and it was there was a male model in the front, so I turned to the side to look at George. I was tired of looking at the guy in the front, and I was like, hey George, I said, I see that you're illustrating a comic book. And we started talking. I was like, look, I'm starting Crazy Comics, you know, you want to learn more about it? Let's talk. And that's how it started. And then, I found a friend who was able to get us full gloss, high color, gloss, printouts of our books. The only caveat was that it would be stacks of sheet, flat sheets, and we would have to fold it and staple it ourselves.
Yeah.
And so I was like, but we were saving hundreds of dollars getting it full gloss. We were paying what you would pay for black and white newsprint for full color gloss.
Especially and at that time. Yeah.
Yes. And then, so, you know, then, you know, my budget was, you know, limited. So I had a friend who knew Michael Carbonaro, who was the promoter of the Big Apple Comic Con. And he introduced me to Michael. And I was like, hey, Mike, you know, how do I get a table? He goes, well, you got to pay this amount and go see that guy. I said, no, you don't understand. So in anticipation of meeting him, I did this poster of his event.
Yeah.
And as I pulled it out of my portfolio, I said, look. And he's like, that's my show. I said, yes. He goes, who did that? I said, I did. He goes, can you do it again? I said, yes. He goes, you do it again and I'll give you a free table.
That's how I
got into the Big Apple back in 2005. And for 4 years, we helped with their marketing. And then we had a spot with the Big Apple.
Nice. Wow. Way to work it.
Yeah, I was a hustler.
That's great. No, I mean, that's weird. So wait, I have to ask you really quickly, where in Jersey were you from?
Well, so I was born in Brooklyn, raised in Queens. I moved to Jersey when I met my wife. So we were in Union City. Then we ended up in Hackensack.
Oh, Hackensack. That's great. Yeah. Hackensack. Yeah. My mother lives in Hackensack, Lex. That's from Superman. I don't know if you remember that. But no, see, that's funny. I was born in Queens. Raised in Queens for a little bit, and then Jersey in Leonia. So like right there, like Fort Lee, Palisades Park area, like right smack in the middle. Yeah.
We used to go to Edgewater to the theater, to the boathouse.
Yeah. The Edgewater. Oh, wow. Those are, yeah. It's totally different now. I went back a couple of years ago and I was like, this is Edgewater? Like, what happened? I hadn't been in years. So, yeah. Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, no, good to know. Nice to meet a fellow bridge and tunnel person, I guess.
I don't miss it.
It's so great, though, because I still hang on to that born in New York thing. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, No, I was born in, I'm a New Yorker. Shut up about it. You know what I mean? But, you know, it was mostly in Leonia, which is also the home of Vision and the Scarlet Witch, I should say. But that was reading comics as a kid and reading an Avengers book where two of the characters supposedly lived in my town was amazing. I will leave it at that. But no, that's great. But now you're based in Texas?
Yeah, so, you know, my wife is from Texas. Her family's out here.
Oh, okay.
And so I was like, you know what, she spent the first half with me. It's only fitting that I returned the favor. And it wouldn't have happened this soon, but it was because of COVID. Mm. The company I worked for went belly up.
Oh, sorry.
And then the production stopped in New York City for filming, and she's a makeup artist on film sets.
Oh,
so
okay.
That stopped. So, and we're like, there's no better time than to skip Dodge than now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we had a family meeting with the extended family and, you know, they helped us find a location out here and, you know, we secured the location and then she stood in Jersey because the moment we got this location, she got a job.
Oh.
And so she was working there until up to Christmas. And she was there for the selling of our home.
Gotcha.
So, cause we got this before we got our home sold and then, we closed on that. She came home for Christmas and she's been home since. You know, and now she's up and running out here. And, so it was just a matter of just, you know, I think at the time New York was just getting a little more stressful for me.
I would imagine. I mean, you were in the city. So like during COVID and all that.
Yeah. So when everything first locked down, I was employed with a company and everybody was laid off except for senior leadership. And our roles changed. We were actually moving product out of our brick and mortar locations and physically loading up trucks to get it because we didn't have any staff to get it back to the warehouse. Mm. So that way, because our e-commerce business was still on, but all our locations were closed.
Yeah.
So we were doing that for several months until there was a 8 a.m. call. Everyone's vacations were canceled at 8 a.m. They said, everyone has to be here, it's mandatory.
Oh,
and
wow.
Said, we're closing up shop, we're going out of business. And so that was, that was heartbreaking. So then we were at a crossroads and I was like, all right, what do we do? And so we looked at our finances and it's like, all right, we can make it this amount of time. And I said, well, I'm going to go and try to build this. And
yeah.
During this time. And that's what I've been doing. I've just
Isn't
been working
that interesting?
Really hard.
I mean, I find that, I mean, it seems like all of that is obviously hardships, and really, I wish you had not, you and your family had not had to go through any of that. But isn't it interesting how, like, when the job that, you know, however long you've been working, and that goes away, that is the thing that sort of like pulls the blinders off of your eyes and is maybe not like, what have I been doing all this time? But it is a little bit like, what have I been doing all this time? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's exactly. It's like, all right, I've been, you know, working for someone else my entire life. I'm going to take this opportunity to work for myself and see what, if I can make this stick. And yeah. So that's what I did. I just, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
This is what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a little bit in the same situation right now where my employer is moving my job out of state, and I do not know like where it is going or what is necessarily happening. And it's so fascinating to me where I'm very much like what you went through, where maybe a bit where, I mean, I can't presume to know exactly what you went through, but for me, it's very much like, what have I, you know, like there's this weird layer of, you know, I don't know what you call it, a sheen or something that comes off of you. And you're like, okay, I have been doing this for this long, you know, for a certain reason, which is, you know, to feed my family and take care of. And then once it starts to go away, you're very much like, huh, what have I, you know, what you, yeah. It kind of makes you question your life choices, right?
Yeah. You go through a series of emotions. First you start with shock, and then you're like, then you're angry, and then you're scared.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, oh my God, you know, you start thinking, cause you know, it was simultaneous. We both were out of work simultaneously.
Yeah.
It was like, what the hell just happened here?
Yeah.
And, so then it was like, so then, you know, again, you know, we met with the extended family, and, you know, we looked at everything, we crunched the numbers, like, all right, we'll eliminate this, eliminate that, eliminate this. Yeah. You can survive this long. And, then was like, you know what? The taxes were so out of control in Jersey, and you know, and the paying those to the bridges and tunnel fees and everything was just like, God. You know what?
Last time I was there, I was like, people cross this bridge every day. I was like, yes. Are you kidding me?
It's like every other week they raise the price. It's crazy.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yes. So yeah. It was like, you know what? It's time to go. So you know, and you know, I loaded up the pods with just one of my buddies. We had two pods that were shipped over to Texas.
Yeah.
And then me and my buddy got into a car, you know, and we drove all the way to Texas, and then we met the pods here and we unloaded them, just him and myself. And I was like, because, you know, we didn't have that budget to be able to hire crews and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, let's just do it ourselves. And we unpacked, and then I got the house settled, and So it was just, and then I set up my room. One of the first things I did was I'm going to set up my workspace.
Were you able to get a bigger place like in Texas?
Yes, it's crazy. Yeah. I got more space in Texas than I had in Jersey for less. It's crazy. But,
so now you got a bigger office is what I'm thinking.
Actually, my office is better. It's not, the one I had, what I did was we had a garage that I converted into a studio. And it was rectangular shape. This is a perfect square, and it works a lot better than the other one. Was bigger because I had a conference table in it because of my podcasting.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I had a, you know, 5 mic station because I had, you know, a podcast with my buddies.
Oh.
And so this one, and now I don't have that luxury because everybody I know is in Jersey. So I was like, you know what, I won't be having anybody over to do podcasting. I can still do it from here. My buddies do it virtually.
Yeah.
But what's great about this location is that I'm on a second floor, big window, so I get fresh sunlight, and it's a perfect square. So on one side of the room is my podcasting station, and on the opposite side is my drawing station. And then I have a big closet with all of my supplies and everything. My bags and boards, my boxes for shipping, for Kickstarters and everything. So it's just very functional, and it's an easy place and a convenient place to work in.
No, that's great. What is the name of your podcast? Is it something you're still doing, or?
Yes, Catch the Craze. I created it back in 2005.
Okay.
As a means to promote the small guy.
Okay.
Right? And because at that time it was just iFanboy and Comic Geek Speak, and they were promoting all the big guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And always talking about, so. I created a podcast, didn't know what I had at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it took off, and we were getting I mean, thousands and thousands of downloads because it was all audio at the time. And then when we started doing video, we were getting 8,000 views. We didn't understand that. And then when I walked away from everything.
Wow.
So if I always say, if I would have just stood with the podcasting throughout the years, I mean, it would have been a different story. So when I came back in 2019, we relaunched the podcast as well.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I don't know. Good for you. I'm sorry. What was the name of it again?
It's Catch the Craze with a D-A, not a T-H-E.
Okay. Okay. Cool. Yes. No, that's great. I'm going to have to check that out. That's awesome. I don't mind pumping other people's podcasts on my podcast. You probably have more listeners than I do anyway. No, I mean, so, you know, just to sort of like wrap this up a little, because we're coming to an hour and I don't want to take up too much of your time. Obviously, all our time is valuable. Talk to me about, because what I'm very curious about is in 2008, you walk away because of whatever happened with the Warner Brothers deal, right? Like it fell through right. And there's a change in leadership. And obviously when that happens, a lot of products just like get wiped away. And so for you, does that just like, did you keep reading comic books? Did you walk away from comic books completely? Was the end game for you getting that sort of animation deal? Is that the end game for you now? Like, you understand? Because like I talk to a lot of like indie creators and many of them they've either developed their comic because it was a script that they couldn't get made into a movie or a TV show or something like that, or they're developing a comic in hopes of getting a TV show or a movie and things like that. And it's sort of, I don't want to say rare, but maybe a little rare when I come across a creator who's just like, no, I just like comics and, you know, whatever happens, happens. And obviously whatever happens, happens is great, you know, more money to that. But when you walked away, like, was it just like, I'm just done with everything because this just destroyed my love for this or like what?
It was the financial burden. It was it was some internal stuff that happened with the team, and it was the deal that fell through. And so it was a bunch of things that culminated, and then I just walked away. My goal coming back is to build a life where I can create and have my work out there.
Yeah.
Whether it's in publication or in film, whatever it is, I want to have it consistently out there.
Yeah.
You know, and I always said, you know, it's like I want my characters to be loved the way I love the characters I grew up with, you know, yeah. And that's my goal. And so I create when I like the script for this in my toilet and for duty, it writes itself. So I illustrate first and then the dialogue comes after. It comes as I'm illustrating.
Interesting.
Where my previous works, I always had the script, the bio, the timeline, the everything already written. And then I use that as my guide when I'm illustrating. With this, I illustrate first. It's a very unique way, but it works for this project. And my goal with this is several things. Number one, to introduce comics to young readers. And in every book of Desmond and My Toilet, there's four pages of problem solving.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah, puzzles, right? Yeah.
Yes, there's word puzzles, there's a maze, there's problem solving. The first issue has a thesaurus because Duty does have an extended vocabulary, so there's a thesaurus in there for cool. Young readers. It's a great way to, one, introduce kids to a safe comic book, you know, because there's a lot of adult content out there. And for the family to get together and have fun because you're muscle bound, you know, dude that's working out in the gym to just, you know, the kid that's playing with, marbles in the park. Here's an opportunity. You're going to laugh. It's a fun for all ages comedy series. And, you know, for me, it's just not enough of that just wholesome fun, wacky, funny stuff. And everyone's so serious. Everything on TV is violence. Yeah. I'm swimming upstream while everybody's going downstream and, you know, taking a chance. But I believe in what I do and I believe in this story. And I'm hoping that as a reader that you will fall in love with them just as much as I have.
No, that's great. I mean, I think that's a like really great goal. I'm really sorry that you went through whatever you went through back in 2008 to make you just like throw everything away. It must have been like extremely traumatic for you.
It was heartbreaking to a point where I just refused to acknowledge look, like I didn't even go into a comic shop for 10 years.
Really? So you just like walked away from all of it?
Everything, yes. And I was a big Spawn fan.
Oh,
Yeah,
really?
yes. I mean,
Wow. Well,
at that
you
time,
and
I
I
was
may differ
reading.
there, but anyway, go on.
So that's like I love the I have I only went back for Jeff Smith's Bone.
Sure.
I'm a bit I love
Oh my
that
God.
brand. I'm glad it's coming on
I've been
Netflix.
trying to get him on this show like for years, and I just get no response like from his team. I've met him at Comic-Con once, and he was super nice, and he did a drawing for my daughter because I was like, oh,
Oh, that's
I
awesome.
my daughter learned to read. I taught my like this is not false. This is true. I taught my daughter to read using Bone. And he was
Wow.
super nice, and he's like, oh, here, let me. And he drew a little phone bone for her, and I took it home, and she was like, yeah, super nice guy, but I cannot get an interview. Like, it's just, I guess I'm not big enough. I'm not the New York Times. But anyway, go on.
So I mean Telos. I mean, there was just a lot of
Oh,
stuff that I was
Telos, yeah.
I love that stuff. Battle Chasers. I was a big Stephen Platt fan who, he did Prophet and Soul Saga and
Yeah, I
Fighting
remember
American.
that
So
stuff.
for and then I walked away from everything. And
That must have been hard.
it was. I just didn't want to acknowledge it because it was painful for me because I had to do it because I had to be, I had to become an adult for the for my family. But for me, that's the one thing that I've been working on. With me, it's always all or nothing, and I have to learn how to, find a middle ground. And it's
You're
like,
East Coast. Yeah. You're East Coast. You're very much like, I mean, my wife will say the same thing about me sometimes too. I mean, I've gone through my life like, ex-girlfriends and stuff, and it's like, I'm done, I'm done. Like, I don't want to have anything to do with you. Like, we're over. Like, that's it.
Yes,
Like,
I vanish. Phone number changes everything. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's not a good way to live. It gotta be.
No.
Thankfully, California has mellowed me out a little bit more to that. But yeah, you're East Coast. You're like, I'm done. I'm done with you. I don't want to have anything to do with you. Like, yeah, but that must have been hard because I mean, beyond the, I mean, you still must have drawn during that time, right? Or like messed
From
around. Like
time
you
to
can't
from
shut
yeah.
that off, right?
Yeah, from time to time, I always had a sketchbook in my briefcase, and I always had pencil with me wherever I was because whether it was I was on lunch or whatever it was, I would doodle. I tried going to a Comic Con as a spectator, and I felt so out of place.
Oh,
Like
really?
I felt like even though the place and it was a New York Comic Con, and if even though there were thousands of people there, I felt like the place was dark and the spotlight was on me, and I felt like people were pointing. I was like the awkward guy. Oh, you gave up. That was that. That was like
Oh,
I
that's
was like I.
interesting.
It was the weirdest feeling I ever felt. I was like, whoa, I just don't. This was my home, and I don't even feel like I recognize this place
Yeah.
anymore.
There's
So
definitely
that was
times
tough.
even today. I know what you're feeling because like I'll go to a comic con convention, as a spectator, or there's a lot of people like, I'm going to San Diego. Do you want to go to San Diego? I'm like, I don't want to go to San Diego. It's too crowded. It's expensive. It's like crazy. It's like I've got, and then they look at you like you have three heads. Like, why aren't you going to like the greatest thing? And I'm like, cause I went for like 10 years in a row and I'm tired and the hotels are expensive. And it's like, maybe I want to go to Hawaii or something. Like, I don't know. Like, so I
Exactly.
know what you're talking about. Like people think you have three heads if you don't want to be at the show,
Yes,
Yeah,
yes.
yeah. Or they think that you're shooting yourself in the foot or something like that. And I'm like, maybe I am, but like, you
Which is
know.
why I'm excited about Texas because the state of Texas has so many comic book conventions. It's out of control. And so I just signed up for Fan Expo in July, in June. I'm looking at some lot of I missed the deadlines for a lot of the small local ones. But there's so many of them. So I'm like, oh, you know what? Let me build an audience in these smaller shows out here and learn the lay of the land.
Well, I'm glad Texas has that. Other things that I could say about Texas, I don't know, but I'm glad that you're happy there, and I'm glad that you found a good place there. And it sounds like you're sort of like making your comeback, and you're kind of like excited about it.
I feel like I got a newfound outlook on life and my purpose, and I'm having fun with this, and I'm excited to reintroduce it, and I can't wait to see how he grows on people because issue one is just the introduction to the wacky adventure that he just go, goes on, and then after issue 10, that the punchline is the title, and that's in issue 10. And then he spins off into his own series, High on Duty from Uranus. And there's also a picture book, Duty's Adventures, as him growing up as a kid on the planet Uranus. So I have several things. I have a coloring book, a guidebook, and a trading card game that I'm developing for it.
You're a busy guy. Yeah. That's crazy. So
it's a lifestyle brand for me. With Duty, I want it all encompassing. There's a 50-second animated trailer that's on the Kickstarter campaign that people can see, and that's the opening sequence for the comic book when he first crash lands.
Okay, well that's cool, man. Like I'm very happy for you. I'm glad that you're sort of like making your comeback. I'm glad that you're safe, and even if it is in Texas, and I'm glad that you found your way back, because I mean, I can understand the heartache that you must have gone through when that just like, you know, so many people. I mean, I live in LA, you know, I was an actor in my 20s, and I used to run into people who were like, oh man, I auditioned, like older guys who was like, yeah, I auditioned for Back to the Future and I was so close. And it's just like, oh man. And then they just like gave up and like, they were just done. Like they got so close. So I'm glad that you're coming back and, you know, doing your own thing. And, you know, you seem very happy with where you're at. So that's great.
I am. Thank you. Yes, I am. And, you know, and again, Duty brings it out in me. And, you know, and I have my
Duty brings it out. Yeah. Are you seriously going to call your book Duty from Uranus? Because that's people are going to be like, wait, what? I mean, but then there's Captain Underpants. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, in big letters, it's Hi, I'm Duty. And then in small letters underneath, it's from Uranus. So Duty's he's the, but again, you know, it's not as scatological as you think. I think people always assume the worst, but reviewed by Newsarama. It's been the product highlight of Licensing Expo. It's been featured in the news. It's safe, all ages, fun, and humor.
That's great.
I promise you, don't be afraid of the title.
That's great. That's awesome. So where can people find you on the internets, on the interwebs, or on social media and stuff?
On social media, if you just put at Catch the Craze on any social media platform, you'll find me. And or you can go to my website, icreatestories.com.
Okay, cool. And for now, Kickstarter, There's an Alien in My Toilet, number one. Yes. Your name is Samuel Vera. Samuel, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate it. This, you know, has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. You can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that wonderful social media stuff. And our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Thank you for listening. Go check out There's an Alien in My Toilet. There's an Alien in My Toilet on Kickstarter. I just love the name. It's great. Thank you, Samuel Vera. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool. And that's it. We will be back soon with another episode. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy.
Part-Time Fanboy doing my thing.
Fanboy.com.